So today we're going to talk about self-esteem. And as someone, I make my living off of social media, which, you know, makes me feel a little conflicted because it's also the number one abuser of people's self-esteem in a way with all the comparison and envy. And I don't know, I don't know what you particularly know about that. I'm sure as comedians, we deal with a lot of rejection, which affects our self-esteem. I don't know in your field, if, I mean, I'm sure you deal with it a lot with your patients.
Yes, definitely. There's benefits to social media, and there's a lot of negatives. Yeah. It is addictive. Mm-hmm. It is harmful. People are, if you think about it, if you have a really bad experience at a restaurant, you are much more likely to go home and write about that than if you had a pretty decent experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? So if they're writing about your performance, mm-hmm. they're going to be more likely to write like, this guy was terrible, than they are to like go home and say, you know what? I had a really good time. They were really funny.
Yeah.
So you have to take everything with a grain of salt. That's and true. It's also easy to be harsh because you're anonymous in a way.
Yeah.
You know, people are going to say things on social media that they would never say to your face.
Yeah. Keyboard commandos.
Mm-hmm. So you always have to take that with it. Like, how serious is this?
But it sucks.
How much do I want to believe it?
The stuff that always gets you are the things you, the only reason it hurts you because it's things you already think about yourself.
Well, that's absolutely true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, if I call you a name and
so you're saying their insults
fit,
are true?
That's not what I'm saying. Okay. What I'm saying, maybe they are. No, what I'm saying is that if I call you a name and you absolutely don't believe that's true about you.
Yeah.
You're going to walk away going, what is wrong with Dr. Corey?
Yeah.
She's off her mind.
She's delusional.
Yeah.
She's delusional. Yeah. She must be talking about somebody else. But if I hit a nerve and that's something that has bothered you, that's really going to hurt because
yeah.
it's already sensitive and you already believe it.
Yeah.
Right. And I think, you know, if I'm reading 1,000 posts about myself, some of them are going to hit a nerve, whether they understand that or not, whether they really meant it or not. By just the law of averages, they're going to hit something that really does hurt.
But
there's always a good way to avoid all that, and that's just don't post.
Don't read it.
Yeah, don't read it.
Yeah. Yeah, but let's go even more like small scale.
Or hire somebody to screen it.
Yeah, hire somebody to do your shit.
I'm available.
But even
I'll screen
like
screen this.
But let's think more to the average person, not someone who's necessarily like posting some type of art or anything like that. Like the average person who self-esteem is being affected by social media, whether it's like comparison.
It's still the same process.
Yeah.
Right?
It's just scaled up.
If I write about something and then half my friends are like, oh, what are you talking about? That's silly or that's stupid.
Mm-hmm.
If I already think that I'm silly or stupid, that's going to hurt.
It's going to get
so it's probably blown up because, first of all, you're public figures and your livelihood, depends on that. But also because you have a lot more people posting who really don't even know you.
Not at all.
So yeah. It's so easy to take something you say out of context.
You're just a two-dimensional figure.
Right. And there's also like this belief that you're somehow, I couldn't harm you with my words because you're famous.
Yeah, the whole sticks
right?
and stones concept.
So, right. So I could say whatever I want about you because you don't care what I have to say. But in reality, it can be really hurtful.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's why they have, I mean, even the whole campaign that they started doing after all, like the school shooting started really getting really amped up. There was even shirts that people were walking around with saying that sticks and stones may break your bones, but words can get you killed.
Right, right.
Like that's,
or how many suicides,
reality.
How many bully victims, cyber bully victims, suicide,
yeah.
or
yeah.
attempt to,
yeah.
you know, because it's just so hurtful. And especially younger people, they don't
yes.
know, even know who they are. They're trying to figure out who they are.
And those,
yeah.
especially the kids that are coming from hurt environments, mm-hmm. interacting with kids that maybe didn't come from that much of an environment. Like these are kids that have experience, like going for the jugular mm-hmm. versus mm-hmm. some kid that like the worst has ever happened to them, that their mom called them a poopy head.
Punished them.
Yeah. like, yeah. don't be a poopy head.
They lost
get in your
Xbox
room.
Controller.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right, right.
And then you have some kid who, has three older siblings that do nothing but destroy them emotionally. So they go online and mm-hmm. they dish that mm-hmm. out to somebody who's not
right.
prepared for that.
Hurt people.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just also think that with social media, you know, my theory is that, like, because I've had people say to me, like, oh my God, like, you must be so confident getting all that validation. But my own theory is when you're dependent on an external source mm-hmm. for your confidence, self-esteem, validation, whatever you want to call it, that actually just makes you more dependent on it as opposed to you performing acts that make it come internally. But then at the same time, is that true? Is there really any truly internal self-esteem? Because it's everything is based on environment and interactions.
Mm-hmm. I mean, have you ever heard of Buddha?
The comedian?
Oh,
sorry, no one's gonna get that. It's a comedian we both know.
Yeah, no. Shout out to Stephen Buddha.
Yeah,
that's his real Jones. Name.
Yeah, his real name is Stephen Buddha.
I didn't know his last name
is Buddha. Okay. It's not just because he's fat. Well, actually, he used to be a lot fatter. He was 500 pounds.
I've seen those. Yeah, I've seen those photos.
This dude, like, he looked like he ate himself twice. But no. The actual Buddha, the whole concept of self-actualization, like when becoming one with oneself, what is that?
Is it even achievable though? You know, because at the end of the day, can you get self-esteem without some sort of external source?
So we start our self-esteem by how we're treated, right? So if you are a little baby and you're crying and mommy and daddy take an hour to come to you, you start to think, and it's not conscious words, right? You don't have words, but you start to believe that the world, there's no trust, there's no, or maybe I'm not important. If bad things are happening in your family when you're a little kid, we have a tendency to think everything is about us. And so we think bad things are happening. I must be bad. I must deserve this. I'm doing something wrong. If I'm a good kid, mommy and daddy won't fight with each other. You know, and you start to have thoughts like that.
Yeah.
So our original self-worth really does come from our parents and our families. And then we go to school. And when you go to school, then, you know, do the other kids like you? Are they nice to you? Are they mean to you?
Yeah.
Does the teacher call on you? Or does the teacher call you in front of the class and embarrass you? You know, that happened.
yeah, that definitely happened.
But that happened to me. But, you know, so that's how you start to then build more and more self-worth or not, right? Yeah. So if mom and dad don't pay you a lot of attention and you have a older sibling who's a bully, and then you go to school and the kids aren't really nice to you and the teacher calls you up and says, what are you, an idiot? And the whole class is like, ha, 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 you know, then you don't have opportunity to build self-worth.
Yeah.
Right? You need to have successes to build self-worth. Can you overcome it? Absolutely. It's going to take work, right? And the longer that you have none of those self-esteem building experiences, the harder it is going to be. You're going to have to seek them. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to have to challenge your automatic thoughts.
Because the clay is a little bit more firm. Right.
So if you really do have a low self-esteem and you read 100 posts about your performance and 99 of them are good, you're going to focus overly on the one that was bad.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Because that's the one you actually believe. Yeah.
And you're going to dismiss the other ones, or maybe you'll dismiss the other ones. Oh, well, they were just nice. Oh, I remember this. This one knows, you know, Petey, so that's why they're saying something nice to me. Or this girl wanted, you know, I bought her a drink. You know, you find ways to dismiss it so it's not as important.
Mm-hmm. You dismantle.
Because you really, like, don't believe those positive responses.
So how would you go into actually formulating your head into believing those, or at least accepting them?
Right. So it starts with recognizing when you're dismissing them or minimizing them. Mm-hmm. It starts with recognizing that and then challenging them and hearing more of them. And if you're still unsure, validating them by saying to somebody you do trust, you know, I was told this and I was told that. Do you think that's true about me?
Get it out of your head. Yeah, bring it into the world.
Or bring evidence.
Yeah,
right. Bring evidence to convince yourself. Right.
Reinforce those.
And it does take work, but it is doable.
Yeah.
And it's worth it, because if you don't feel good about yourself, you're not going to take care of yourself. You're not going to try new things. You're not going to challenge yourself. You're going to settle for what little crumbs you get or whatever you deserve, you know?
Yeah.
And other things are going to be even more hurtful maybe than they deserve to be. So that one negative review is going to be really painful, despite 99 positive reviews.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then how do you get up on the stage the next day?
Yeah. What?
Two cocktails beforehand?
A lot of comedians. That's the only way they can.
It's very hard. And it's a hard thing anyway. Public speaking, we know, is like the most common
fear,
irrational fear,
yeah,
really. And then add to it, like, your livelihood is based on it. There's a lot of pressure for you guys.
Yeah. So it's funny because even though we're saying it is an internal source of self-esteem, it all is brought in externally at an early age. Mm-hmm. And when you become an adult, you can't unconsciously grow self-esteem. It has to be a choice, right? Do you think?
Yeah. I mean, the more you do things that you get good responses from,
yeah,
the better you feel about yourself, so whether you're intending that or not. Mm-hmm. Right. Or, you know, and for some people, they've sort of fall into something they're good at and they may not have ever known that before. And that's really rewarding. And that starts to improve their self-esteem.
And it's not like they're like, I'm going to make my self-esteem better, but through that.
It's changing your environment to suit your ultimate goal, basically.
Yeah. And I remember listening to this podcast that talked about, you know, we don't really think about it, but it kind of sounds kind of obvious that if you want self-esteem, you have to do esteemable acts, you know, not even just like things that actually build up your own confidence, but it, this isn't the only way, but by helping other people, you know, because then you are proving to yourself and to the world that your character, and so then you now have evidence to counter all those negative thoughts.
And doing for others is really great for your self-worth.
Yeah.
It feels really great to do. And also, you're not overthinking.
Yeah.
You're thinking about someone else.
But then the negative voice could be like, yeah, but you just did that just to, you know, because you're selfish and you're trying to feel better.
That's why I will never be unemployed.
Because of that voice. That voice right
there.
That
inner voice is really powerful.
That voice right there pays your rent.
You have to work at it.
Yeah.
You can't just let it have its own conversation. You have to start directing the conversation.
Yeah.
But the worst part is when you talk to somebody else and they start asking you, so are you doing this because you really want to help people, or is this kind of like you're trying to grease yourself for the shitty person that you're on the side?
That's less about you, though. That's
exactly
about
the other person. They say people reveal themselves and what they dislike
Absolutely.
About others.
Yeah,
because they're only noticing what they're insecure about. It's like parents, you know what I mean? Like, you only really get on your kid because you're like, oh fuck, I see some of myself in that.
Some of the time, or you really don't get along with the kid that's most like you.
Yeah. That's why I feel like a lot of the times, like, this is just speaking in broad terms, but like, a parent will like the kid of the opposite gender more because it reminds them less of themselves. And
more
then it's
of
like,
their spouse.
And then the mom looks at the daughter like, oh my gosh, like, why are you doing this? But it's just because they did the same thing when they were a kid.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to do this exercise when I ran a therapeutic community in a prison. If I had two inmates that were not getting along and they just could not get along, they would each have to write a list of everything they hate about the other guy. And then they would come into the room and I'd make them take out their list and I'd give them each a pen and say, circle the ones that are true about you. It was powerful.
Of their own list. Of the list they wrote.
Of the list they wrote, they had to circle what was true about themselves. And what you found was almost everything on the list was true about themselves. And
or at least they thought it was.
It just, the conflict was evaporated.
It's better than making them hug it out.
Wow. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, you know.
But it's funny. It does feel
like curse at.
It does.
And it was sex offenders, so that would just be weird.
Yeah. Now they're both hard. But then it's funny because, like, literally, it almost sounds like that method almost sounds like something that could have happened in a preschool, or I mean, they can't write, but you know what I mean. It almost, but it does feel very
well,
like
you barely write in prison
it
too.
Yeah, I guess you're right. They were both using crayons.
We would give a lot of assignments to the inmates, you know, to help them work through things.
Cool.
But it was really effective because we don't think like that. We don't. We just, oh, that's so annoying that person does that.
Yeah.
We don't go, oh yeah, I do that too. Yeah. Who does that? Who thinks that?
I try to catch myself on it because, you know, we're all hypocrites to some extent, you know, where it's like, whether it's like, you know, when the bitter voice starts coming in, whether it's about like another comedian or another guy, and you start realizing like, oh, the things that I'm like critiquing them on are things that I'm like,
that
I'm
I do,
or I'm afraid that's how I'm perceived and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, it really only.
What about when you're critiquing them because they like actually suck?
That's tough because I think I actually suck. So that's
we weren't going to do an intervention today.
But yeah, it's tough because it's like there is a fine line where it's like, are you being pessimistic or are you being realistic?
Yeah, because if you interact with somebody or you engage with somebody that continuously does things that are red flags, Mm-hmm. There's that moment that you realize it. It's not that you can cut them enough slack, but eventually you're going to see that they're really just a difficult person.
Yeah. You give them the benefit of the doubt because you're like, hey, I know how I can get.
Exactly.
We can all.
Everybody can have a bad day.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Bad week, bad month, bad year. But
and that's.
Eventually they have to
succumb. And eventually you got to succumb to the reality.
And it's good to have that middle ground because people can go the other way and they can completely dismiss a person just off of one bad interaction.
That's being healthy though. That's mm-hmm. that's having boundaries.
That is true. That is true. But I also feel like just in the current landscape, you know, people, we just. Maybe because we're overwhelmed by so many people we're exposed to, but I think we're very quick to dismiss someone's whole life. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Not to be like, oh, cancel culture. But you know what I mean? We just like dismiss people very easily. And we're just like, oh, one fuck up, you're gone. And stuff like
that. I guess
that.
It really depends on...
It depends. It really depends.
It depends on the...
I'm more just talking about like if someone's like rude or something, like very like minor, we're just very like, that's a rude person, as opposed to like really like taking the time to be like, well, what was going on? You know?
I don't know if that's just now.
Yeah, you're right.
You know? I mean, we are designed to categorize things and people, right?
Yeah.
And it's for safety. So if, you know, if you're like living in the wilderness and you're like, oh, I get sick when I eat this berry, I'm going to stay away from all the other red berries.
Yeah.
Right? And we're built that way. Mm-hmm. Right? And it translates sometimes in really hurtful ways, like racism or prejudging somebody mm-hmm. because of one interaction. But then there's other times like the hair stands up on my neck. I'm going to avoid that person because something's telling me that that person might be dangerous or hurtful. And so sometimes we really have to learn to listen to that instant judgment.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, your spidey senses. Like,
your spidey senses.
When do you go with your gut and when do you know when to challenge it?
It's, well, I go with my gut if I'm frightened by something, if I feel fear, because it's not worth the risk.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm annoyed by somebody, I'll probably give them a second chance.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, they annoy me twice, though.
Yeah.
Life's too short. Life's too short to surround yourself with annoying people.
This ain't baseball. Two strikes, you're out, bro.
On the other hand, like, if you're... Like if in my field, if a patient is really unhappy with the care I'm giving, I would rather the patient say, I'm not happy with the care that you're giving me and this is why, rather than they just stop showing up or they put in a transfer to another, you know, ask for a new therapist and don't give me, that doesn't give me any feedback and I don't have an opportunity to grow.
Yeah.
I think it's a hard thing to do to say to somebody, you know, I think you're terrible at your job, so I'm going to go see a different therapist. But that's the only way I could be a better therapist.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's really hard when you're in a public eye and you're doing comedy, but you probably do need to hear it. And
that's
you need
the thing.
To hear it from somebody who's kind about it.
When your audience is being honest with you and giving you like not positive feedback, but when they're giving you constructive feedback, that's the difference between what's going to destroy your self-esteem versus what's going to give you something to look at to change. Mm-hmm. The whole Matt Rife thing.
Mm-hmm.
He doubled down on something that he was catching flack for, but it wasn't like people were going after him. Oh my God, you're an idiot, because people were just giving him, hey, look, don't talk about this.
Yeah.
Right.
Versus, I mean, I'm sure there were people who were doing
that. I mean, I'm sure.
For and as artists, we focus on that.
Of course. That's what we're going to focus on. And that's why he got hurt. That's why he decided to do a hurtful rebuttal. Because when he did the website with the helmets, what is that for? That's to tell people that they are retarded.
Special needs.
Right.
But why would you tell somebody that they're special needs? Because you want to hurt them.
Yeah.
Why would you want to hurt them?
Because you're hurt.
Because you're hurt.
You just got hurt.
People hurt.
You're swinging
people
back.
Some of it is on the delivery, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to get a better response if I give you feedback that's kind. And thoughtful in my words, right? Yeah. Doesn't mean that it's better feedback, though. Some of it is about, I have to be willing to hear the feedback, even if it comes to me in a harsh manner.
Yeah.
I need to be able, and that takes self-esteem. So to build self-esteem and quality and skill and all of that, I have to have some self-esteem that I can hear the feedback, even in an ugly form, and say, okay, that's useful.
It's like you got to have money to make money. You know, you got to have self-esteem.
Is that my issue?
Yeah.
No,
broke
that's,
bitches out here.
I think that's so true.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to have something to build on. And so...
And it's tough. It's like, what do you do when you weren't given that as a kid? And
surround yourself with people that will do it.
You got it.
Your environment.
And it's actually when you have a low self-esteem and you think you deserve the worst, you're not motivated to come out of that depression cave, but you have to fight
it. Which was one of the questions, right? Can medication help your self-esteem?
I posted a story asking questions about self-esteem with my followers. And what was one of them?
It was whether or not medication can help your self-esteem.
Or yes. Not.
Or they said or not, after. And it was a white woman too. So,
to answer that question, I would say not directly. It's not going to help your self-esteem directly. However, sometimes medication, especially like antidepressant medications, to name one group, it helps you have the energy to do the work. Mm. It helps you have the focus.
It doesn't do it for you, but at least
doesn't do none of it. Does it for you. There's no medication that's going to.
I thought
stop
you were
going to
plug Zoloft just now.
Yeah, yeah, and that's why today we're sponsored.
Today,
yeah.
It might help you have what you need to do the work, and so there's oftentimes that I'll encourage my patients to see a psychiatrist, or psychiatric nurse practitioner, as we use often in the VA, and that's the point. It's that they want and they're motivated to get well. But it's exhausting. And depression is exhausting.
Yeah, it takes everything out of you.
It really does. And anxiety is also exhausting, right? Mm-hmm. So depression is exhausting all by itself. It's like walking neck high in mud.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Everything is harder to do. Yes. It's hard even to lift your arm. It's like...
Literally.
Oh, just to get out of bed, right? And so who has
energy? You think about
energy?
Using the bathroom for 3 hours.
Yeah, you're like... Maybe I really don't have to go.
Yeah.
So
maybe shit myself's not that bad.
If it gets that bad, you make more appointments with me.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think like sometimes the medication just helps you ease that.
Mm-hmm.
And now you do have that. Who has the energy if you're that depressed to like, let me go ask some people what they really think of me and get some feedback and then hear it and use it? Nobody, right? Yeah. Not if you're in that
state. Or let me go help other people. It's like you can't even help yourself
right
now.
You're like trying to crawl out of bed to get to the bathroom. Like that's a whole day adventure right there. Anxiety is different in that it takes so much energy to contain it. So it gives you energy in a sense, like you feel energized.
But in the wrong direction.
But it's just exhausting because you have to contain it and hold it in and manage it. You can't run around screaming, the world's on fire.
But that's
tough. Bad
feels
idea.
In the tummy.
Right.
Depending on what you're facing, sometimes, at least in my own experience, I've been able to use that, the energy from the anxiety to kind of give me a slingshot into a better headspace. Like even right before I go on stage, sometimes I'll get a real big flush of anxiety and I start telling myself, I'm just excited to be here.
Yes.
Mm. I'm excited to be here.
Interesting thing is that.
Redirect, reframe.
And when I say those things, and then I'll see that the audience is just not there. And they're just, the comedian before me who usually destroys this eating is nuts.
Even he's bombing.
Even he's bombing. And then I tell myself, I make peace with the fact that I'm about to go up there and just eat my own nuts.
Maybe it's about them and not you.
Exactly. Well, I don't even go that far. I just tell myself I'm going to bomb and it's okay. And usually when I do that, I remove the stakes. Mm-hmm. I make it a low stakes situation and I usually come out all right.
Yeah. Because you build expectations. The worst though is when you're in that situation, you're like, nah, man, I'm going to turn this whole thing around, dude. Here comes the star. And then you just bomb too. And you're like,
really.
That's when you don't even stay for the rest of the show.
No.
That's when you disappear before they let on.
You don't even
that's
stop.
A long way down.
You don't lose any speed. You get off stage and
just go straight to the car.
Slow down at all.
Yeah. So, Petey, that was a really good point you brought up. Anxiety and excitement physiologically are the same. It's what we're saying in here. Yeah. So if you turn it around into like, I'm excited about this. This is going to be fun.
Yeah.
You will feel better.
Yep. And I've learned to actually believe myself when I say that.
Mm-hmm. See, that's the negative self-talk always dismantles that. I've tried to reframe it and then they're like, no, you're not, idiot. You're scared.
You're not, you fucking moron.
Yeah, you're a fucking coward, you piece of shit.
We gotta get rid of that one.
You gotta beat that guy up with mushrooms or something.
My dad? No, I'm kidding.
Maybe just do mushrooms with your dad.
Hey, I mean, so I can't just, really do that
when
anymore.
When you hear that voice.
It's not really about just... That was a hack joke.
I'm joking.
Yeah.
When you hear that voice.
Or just, he's probably going to watch this.
Let's finish your statement.
Sorry, sorry.
I'm just kidding. This is free therapy.
No, this is for them.
People pay a lot of money for this. No, this is for you.
This is for them.
They can use it too. But I want you to imagine the old-fashioned tape recorders. You remember the...
No, I don't. Like what? That big. I'm a Gen Z.
He's a Gen Zer, this guy.
I'm 29.
I had a fucking tape recorder.
What you got to say is go to your cell phone. Go to your iPhone.
Look up
voice memos.
Yeah.
Okay. I want you to imagine popping that tape out and putting the new one in, and the new one says, "I got this. Mm. I can do this," or something positive that you do believe.
Mm.
So you actually use this imagery of popping that old tape out that says these negative things.
Yeah, you got to make it something tangible.
The new one in.
When it's just these like floating thoughts, like it's very good. Like even though it's still in our head. Making it a physical thing in your imagination helps just make it like analog where it's like there's so all negative thoughts are just these intangible floating
player,
yeah it can be iPod Nano or
whatever
Zoom but
the whole concept of like I'm gonna remove it and I'm gonna replace it
take
with something
this out
better.
Put it
really
in.
Does help
but you're right I just need to remind myself that it's like it's the same physical sensation as excitement
it really is
yeah
your heart beats faster you sweat a little bit
stomach gets a little tight
and well all the juices leave your stomach right the blood leaves your stomach it goes to your limbs so you can fight so that's what's happening that's why that feels like that
and that's why you see me like sometimes I'll go to the corner I'll jump around a little bit and I'll bounce because I know that the blood is in my extremities
so if I use it
then the entire cardiovascular system actually engages and it's gonna bring that back into the torso
it's not about getting rid of it because the more you try, it's like, don't think about a pink elephant. Like, it'll just exacerbate it. It's like, how do you convert it?
It does pass really quickly, like 6 seconds.
What does?
The adrenaline.
That adrenaline and anxiety,
yeah.
The chemical part of it.
Yeah.
Once it's released, it lasts 6 seconds. You have to keep releasing it for it to keep going.
Oh, wow.
So I have enough trauma.
Channel it or you do
yeah.
some breathing exercises, you could bring it down pretty quick.
Let's say 6 seconds.
The other thing is, though, there are benefits to anxiety. You know, you are going to perform better if you have some anxiety.
Yes.
Right? But it's a bell curve. So once you hit that top performance, any more anxiety than that, right in the toilet.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Then it starts at, like, I can't remember what I was going to say. Where's my list?
Yeah, because what I do feel like when I try not to make a habit of this, but when there are times where I'm like, a little nervous before a show, like, oh, maybe I'll have a drink or something. When I actually calm those nerves, it actually does dull you a bit. And I do have a worse thing. It's like, oh, so I kind of need to be a little bit afraid.
That's
a little
good.
Bit of anxiety.
Yeah. You need a little bit of that. Just it's alertness. I mean, I'm assuming that's what the biological advantage, the whole reason
alertness
why.
Alertness and focus and the energy that you need on stage. You can't go up there and be like, I mean, maybe that's your whole
That's Matt Bridgestone.
But even that is like, that's a choice. And
it's, right. It's not genuine.
Yeah.
He has energy.
Yeah. It's a style.
Right.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, I'm sure you can have high self-esteem and have anxiety as well. Right. Like that's.
Sure.
Yeah.
Not mutually exclusive.
Nope.
Welcome to comedy, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's just, and it's funny because it's one of the questions, I don't know if this was meant as a joke that someone put up was about like, can you, how do you have self-esteem if you're not hot, if you're not attractive?
Right.
You know?
Right.
But the fact that we equate that, whereas like from my experience, like just like knowing people who are just known for being good looking is that the people who put more value in their looks and take their stock of who they are and their identity mm-hmm. in physical appearance are the most insecure people mm-hmm. because they feel like that can go away and that's dependent on people's perception.
Mm-hmm. It's superficial.
It's superficial.
So it's we like, all lose it eventually, like, right? Unless you can afford.
Yeah. It's, yeah. Like, it's like, it's a better question. Is how, around the clock. How can you be hot and have high self-esteem? You know?
I think you can.
Yeah.
I
yeah.
think they're separate. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I think real self-esteem also requires liking who you are.
Yeah.
Not just how you look.
Well, the vanity of how you look has only been a thing affecting humanity for less than 1,000 years. When was a mirror invented? Because that was really when people started able to really see what they look like.
Yeah.
You had other people that were going to engage with you.
You just if based you were, on feelings other yeah, people give you.
Exactly. It was more of a cultural interactive understanding of your appearance rather than somebody going up to a mirror and then critiquing their appearance versus somebody else's.
The interesting thing about appearance, too, is how much it changes.
Yeah.
Right? What's attractive.
Yes.
There's some things that are kind of classic. Yeah. Like, we prefer people who are kind of equal, both sides. They're symmetrical.
A symmetrical face. Right? Yeah.
But
yeah.
not completely symmetrical. We like yeah. somebody who's a little bit not symmetrical.
Yeah. yeah.
Right? So that's why birthmarks or whatever are so popular.
Yeah.
We like that.
Yeah, this I got this put on.
That was smart.
Yeah.
It made you so much hotter. Yeah. You're really hot now. So, but like there was a time when being really heavy was the most attractive thing.
Sign of wealth. Yeah.
People did, right. It was a sign of wealth. And having a tan was because you worked out in the fields.
Poor.
So that wasn't attractive as opposed to the pure white skin of somebody who never left the castle.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny how
my last name's King. That was bad.
Translucent Caucasian yeah, over here.
Exactly. Right. Transparent.
Yeah. So there's like, it's interesting how that changes what we find attractive. Like for a while in the 70s, I want to say that Twiggy the model was so
Twiggy.
Popular. Twiggy was her nickname.
Oh, because she's like a
she
twig.
She was a twig, you know?
Was it Karen Carpenter?
I think she might have been her cousin. No, I don't really know who she was. But that was really attractive. And now, like, you have to have muscle tone, right?
Yeah.
Or body.
Like, as a woman, I'm yeah. talking about. Men, I think, has always been about muscle tone. I don't know.
Boy.
But
well, even... different things do happen. I speak to a lot of women, and they're like, look, when I see a dude that's all, like, shredded and ripped up and everything, that, to me, is not really attractive. I want a guy who's going to have muscle, but with a little bit of pudge over it, and it's like...
Right,
and
it changes.
Yeah.
Well, you know who that's attractive to? Other men, because it's like we want our bodies to look that
yes.
way. So we think that's actually what women want, just because that's like what
yeah.
we want for ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
We're like, oh fuck, that dude's got a six pack. Women must love.
But even the fashion industry, the standard of women being super super duper skinny and very yeah. tall
heroin
and
chic.
That yeah. actually came
that
from that actually came from gay men making the standard for the fashion industry. Mm. They wanted women. They wanted the models to look like gay men.
Mm.
That was ultimately what it was.
Went from Twiggy to Twinkie.
Oh, yeah. yeah. From Twiggy to Twink.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
That's yeah.
That's interesting. But it's also funny so much about our perception of what is attractive is mm-hmm. so circumstantial. Like, I was reading this book that talks about theorize that we really don't have any internal value meter. We base it all on what other people find attractive. Like, I'm more of, I mean, this is simplifying, like, are you an ass guy or a boob guy? I'm more into like butts because I grew up around a bunch of black dudes and the girl in the class that everybody liked was the girl with the biggest ass. Mm-hmm. But if I grew up around a bunch of white dudes and everyone loved the biggest boobs, you know, I probably would be more into that. But you're grown to know what is valued in your tribe mm-hmm. and that's yeah. what you desire. Because you're like, oh, well, I want the girl with the biggest ass because then everyone thinks I'm the guy, you
yeah,
know?
Exactly.
Right. And it's like, and it's funny how much we really just are, you know, a product of our environment in that way. Mm-hmm. Even
and
what
I think too, people are really, they're not aware of what other people really think.
What yeah. do you mean?
I think so often we have no idea.
Yes.
You know? And people will tell you, oh no, I really think this. And maybe they're telling the truth. Maybe they're not. Maybe you believe them. Maybe you don't.
Yeah.
yeah.
You know, I think we really We're not very good at it.
Maybe bring the mic a little closer. Is that good?
I don't know. Nobody has told me.
Sorry, but you're saying. Nobody has told me to. Sorry, maybe we believe them, maybe we don't.
I have to start over.
No. They can.
All right, take it from the top.
No, they can. You're saying like maybe we believe them, maybe we don't.
And sometimes we believe them, and sometimes we don't. And sometimes they're lying, and sometimes they're telling the truth.
Yeah.
Right. So we're left trying to figure it out, and I think it's the how frequently you hear it of whether or not you believe it. You know, do you hear it consistently across different people? But
yeah,
and you know,
people.
I don't know. I don't know that we're really good at that.
Accepting compliments.
Just really understanding like what other people are attracted to us about, or how real it is.
Yeah,
I think there's a lot of ambiguity.
Even just the trying to formulate your own thought of what somebody's intentions are. Because a lot of times, you know the old saying that there, whenever you talk to somebody, there's three conversations happening. The one that you have, the one they're having, and the one that's actually going on.
Right.
So if you have that layer on anything that anybody says, and then also factor in whether or not they're trying to not manipulate but influence your perception or feeling, then you have all these layers of shit that you're trying to figure out, and at that point you don't know what the hell's going on at the end of the day anyway, so you should just formulate your own damn opinion.
Like, how many people do you know who get compliments all day long and they're like, none of that's true? Right? Or like maybe they've won a lot of awards and they're like, I think I'm really a terrible, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, I'm not that good at whatever they think I'm good at.
Right. So how many awards do you need to know that people think you're pretty good?
Well, it's like, you gotta, what's the root of that? You know what I mean? Those are, it's like the
childhood.
Yeah, left exactly.
In that crib too long.
The compliments aren't treating the trying to treat the symptoms, but like what's making it so like, you know, it'll never be enough compliments.
Right, exactly. Or the opposite, right? People who think they're amazing and you're like, no, really, you're not good. Like, did you notice nobody was applauding?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Or like,
but they're like, no, that they were applauding. It just wasn't loud.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what it was. But their hands weren't moving. You know, like
plenty of comedians who like, oh, dude, I crushed. And then like, you're like, what?
I was there for the stage? For
yeah. Exactly. It's like, what are you talking
was
about?
Was I there for that show?
Yeah.
That one.
That was, you're not talking about the one we just did, right?
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, it's like there. It delusion can go both ways. You know, you delude yourself to not believe the negative, you delude yourself not to believe the positive.
Yeah
And
well, and we tend to find what reinforces what we already believe, right?
Confirmation bias.
We're self-selecting on what we pay attention to.
We're looking for something that just confirms, and that's why those negative comments stick out online. And especially I can only imagine what it's like for a kid right now who has social media in middle school.
Oh,
like
they need to stop letting them have.
That is crazy.
I agree with that sentiment. I agree that social media for kids in its form right now, it's too raw.
Right.
I think that there should be a social media platform that is designed for children.
Like a teaching model. Where it's like, you want to write to your friend, it gives you some samples, and then you pick which one fits what you want to say, or you know what I mean?
Yeah, like multiple that kind of choice.
Thing, a multiple messages. Choice thing, because that way they're not going to send those hurtful things.
Exactly.
Or
man.
Exactly.
Inappropriate things.
You guys want to create an app? Let's do this.
Do it.
Startup.
You told people.
Startup.
Wait, everybody. Yeah,
cut this out.
Censor this.
Back it up.
And it's like, I don't want to be one of those like people like, oh, kids today shouldn't have this. Because like, at the end of the day, if I was a kid today, I would be on social media. Like, it's too exciting not to be a part of.
Right. But I think maybe that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
Right. Is to have... If my kids were young, they'd be doing their social media with me sitting there with them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think it's hard. There's so many parents who want to be friends with their kids or
don't want to be the bad guy.
Trust their kids or think their kids they're just fine. And then, you know, when their kid is kidnapped by the sex offender or whatever, they're shocked.
I mean, that's worst case scenario. That's super extreme. But the more common one is being bullied.
Very common.
Or even the just the I don't want to say the ruining of innocence, but there are different levels of social evolution for different kids.
Or the addictive factor.
Well, that I think that's another piece, right? It's not only addictive to kids, it's addictive to adults,
too. It is, but that's what I mean. If you have a kid who has free access to social media all the time, they're more susceptible to get addicted to it. And now every day they have to check the messages before they get dressed.
It depends. Because I know people that are grown-ass adults. I know a dude right now that's in his 50s. Well, he says he's in his 50s. I think he's in his 60s. I think he's a damn liar. But this dude, I've literally seen him anxiety to tears because he put up a post that he thought was killer, and 2 hours later, not a, a single like, and he goes back and he deletes it because he's so anxious that it's really rattling him.
I'm not 60.
I was trying to keep you under wraps.
Yeah,
but put that in the body of a 12 year old.
Yeah, I'm not saying an adult can't get addicted to the social media. Absolutely. Anybody could be, just like any other addiction. But I'm saying, like, children don't have any of the coping skills yet. They don't have, they haven't built their self-esteem.
Homie, I'm a grown ass man. They're I barely have the coping skills.
But with,
I just think they're so vulnerable to it.
And what makes me the most fearful with kids on social media, obviously bullying is a big thing we all talk about, but it's also that dependency. I mean, that is a form of addiction for sure, but just that dependency on that is where you form your identity. And I'm dealing with that now, where it's like, I'm dealing with myself, and I'm sure plenty of people of my age and all sorts of ages are dealing with it as well. It's like, we are letting other people tell us who we are and tell us what we're worth. And it's hard to tell yourself it's not real when you see it affect your life. People say, oh, social media is not real. It's like, okay, well then why do I now have a job because of social media? That's real. So we can't act like social media is not real. And it's like, now our entire identity.
Yeah, are all the opinions real?
I don't know. But it's like, now our entire identity and sense of self is on this external source that we have such little control over. And if I'm struggling with that as a 29-year-old man, I don't know what that's going to be like for my nieces and nephews.
The thing is that whole mindset, the whole mindset of your entire identity is based on an outside structure. I mean, that goes back to even the honor societies of China, where your reputation and the family that you came from and how you your reputation was everything. So there is that social structure that has been a part of our society for thousands of years. The whole concept of having an outside structure that your value depends on. It's just how, because there was people that were addicted to making sure that their family had honor. And they would kill themselves over it. Or even worse, they would go and kill a whole bunch of other people over it. So the concept of having external value dictate your own stock is not something that's new. And the addiction to it is also, it's multiple facets of addiction, because it's not just addicted to how people perceive you. It's also addicted to scrolling. It's also the addiction to entertaining the brain. Not allowing silence. Because the thing is that if there's anything that is more helpful to mankind than peace and silence in their own mind, it's probably going to be chemically induced. I think that the most effective thing that you can do, bless you. The most effective thing that you can do is create silence in your head without it having an adverse effect.
Silence is pain right now.
It is.
We're trying to dull it all the time.
And it, but we have to figure out how to not fix it or erase it, but just cope with it.
Embrace it.
Embrace it. Cope with it.
Value it.
Value it. Yes.
So before we get out of here, I just to wrap it all up, because I know we've touched on like ways that we can help mm-hmm. with self-esteem, but just in terms of like, what are some practices people can do? Like just little things that people are able to do to, I mean, maybe not like completely build their self-esteem, but at least like to kind of counter mm-hmm. negative thoughts.
I would say definitely listen to the voices, mm-hmm. you know, those inner voices, and challenge the ones that are hurtful and hold on to the ones that are helpful.
Yeah.
I would also say try different things and ask for feedback and find people you trust to ask.
Yeah. And I think a great way to challenge those negative voices is to be why zoom out. Why are they saying that? Mm-hmm. Why do I feel that way?
Right.
Is it because of what that kid in fourth grade said to me and now an 8-year old is still
or
affecting
my
life?
Why is it important? Is it because of the fourth grade?
Yeah.
You know, or so absolutely.
Counter them. Where's it coming from? Zoom mm-hmm. out.
Right.
Yeah. Because mm-hmm. I guarantee it's just circumstantial and there's no real objective reason you feel that way. Mm-hmm. It's purely because of something that happened to you.
Yeah.
That's my theory.
Or repeated. Yeah.
But I'm no doctor. Corey. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, everyone.